Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm joined tonight to talk about Who Framed Roger Rabbit? No question mark. By Doug. By Charles Fleischer. Wearing a rabbit suit.
Apparently,
to do
right?
The voice.
Please,
like
Patrick.
A psycho.
I really can't do that. That was a thing in grade school or junior
that
high.
That you could do, please.
Not me, but like some kids could.
They could do killer Fleischer impressions.
They could do, please.
Have you heard this dude's Fleischer?
That was actually, the last one was not so.
All right, I would
hold
talk
on, one more,
it.
One
I
more.
Talked over it.
Please, Patrick.
Nice.
My name is Roger Rabbit.
It's like I'm sitting here with a cartoon bunny. you can find our website and all of our old shows at fthismovie.blogspot.com. Hundreds. No, that's not true.
Over
plus,
100.
Yes. And articles and reviews and lists and columns at fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. And you can find us in the iTunes store or through DVD Verdict at dvdverdictpresents.com. DVD Verdict for all your DVD and Blu-ray review needs.
If you access us through the iTunes site, yeah. Please leave a good review. See what I did there?
Well, you didn't do it. Roger Rabbit. You are not soliciting praise. It's Roger Rabbit.
Therefore, I'm exempt.
Please praise us.
Praise!
We've had a couple of requests for us to do a Roger Rabbit show. So here it is, folks. You're in it.
Buckle up.
This is happening.
This is about to get bumpy as if you're in a cartoon cab going to Toontown.
Before we talk about Roger Rabbit, Douglas, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah. The whole podcast, I'm just going to start stuttering, by the way. That's not his affect. It's just me stuttering because I'm nervous. I've seen a bunch of stuff lately. I finally saw...
A bunch?
I saw Network. I saw Bad Teacher. I saw the Hangover 2. My wife saw Love and Other Drugs. I saw parts of it.
Please rank those in the order of quality. All those movies you just named.
Oh, okay.
Let's burn through them.
Okay, quality for me.
By the way, you better not be on a podcast for a while because you're talking about a lot of movies right now.
I just saw it this last weekend. I was in a movie mood.
Sure.
You know?
Mood. This got old to everyone 2.5 minutes ago.
I understand. And it's not getting old to me.
Nope.
I would rank Love and Other Drugs scenes from as number one.
That's the best out of all those.
Oh, hell yeah. There are certain scenes. Okay, listen. If you haven't seen Love and Other Drugs, don't.
Is it the scenes with the love or the scenes with the other drugs?
The former, not
okay.
The latter.
Got
the
it,
other drugs,
it.
I'm not even sure what the drugs they're referencing are because, again, as I just said, I did not watch the entire movie. My wife watched it. She gave it a thumbs down. She said, P.U.
Do you love seeing Anne Hathaway naked or do you other drugs seeing Anne Hathaway naked?
Both. No, I don't know. If I had to rank them, I guess Network is the best movie I watched, right? Is that what I'm supposed to
you
say?
You sound really annoyed
Network
by having to say that.
Network was so easy to watch. Just kidding. It was laborious.
Laborious. If you guys have seen Network or haven't seen Network and want to hear a podcast on it,
well, right, yeah.
Listen to our podcast on Network.
That's the reason I watch. I'd never seen Network before, and I saw, I want to say it's like 3 or 4 weeks ago, you posted a podcast with JB on Network. And I'm like, man, I really want to listen to this podcast and I want to watch this movie because I know it's supposed to be a really great Oscar-winning kind of famous movie. And I'd never seen it. And I borrowed it from you and I watched it. And I was so into it at first. And then I just subconsciously find myself like checking my watch and checking the timer. I know there's certain people out there that love Network and I apologize. I'm an apologist for my Network indifference, but I just was like, okay.
You just don't like anything that's not new.
Absolutely. Oh my God. Speaking of The Hangover 2.
You don't like anything that doesn't have explosions and a cut every 3 seconds.
Speaking of Transformers Dark of Some Moon. So I saw Network.
You just don't have the attention span.
And I acknowledge that it's awesome. I acknowledge that all the performances are wonderful and it says some things and it does some things and it's edgy for 1976. And again, my perspective, having not seen it in up until 2012, like obviously, a lot of the stuff has happened. It happened years ago. What they're commenting on is not new. So, of course, that has some bearing on my opinion of it. But otherwise, there's certain parts that are just very talky and not in a way that's clever. I don't know. I'm not ripping Network. Network is great. I just wanted to clarify that I watched it.
I if you've listened to the podcast and you have not, but you listeners know that I have some issues with the second half of Network, and it sounds like perhaps you did as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know. I can't even analyze it as you know. Again, listening to the, I did listen to the podcast after I watched it.
Oh, okay.
I did. Absolutely, I did.
Good job.
And listening to JB's comments, in a weird way, he was so emphatically in favor and has such a great memory, and there's a history for him with the movie that I wanted to go back honestly and kind of give it another try, because I know when I have a movie in my past or a movie that I love from my past or an older movie that I'm in love with, and for whatever reason, I want people to share the same experiences or have the same feelings right. that I have for it. So I respect JB immensely, and I wanted to go back almost and watch it. But again, kind of watching it cold without really knowing, even knowing what it's about. I didn't even read knowing, of course, the overarching.
You assume it's about a network.
UBS, apparently. I thought it was about UPN and the Enterprise days. Series.
Yeah. Shasta McNasty.
Wow, that's a deep cut
the
right
secret
there.
Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer. I enjoyed a lot of it, and I respect a lot of it, but it still feels distant to me, is
sure.
my quick sure. review. Quick! I saw Hangover 2, which is, you know, it was literally just something to watch.
Yeah.
Like while I made coffee on a Saturday morning and just had it in the background. Parts were kind of funny. I find myself laughing embarrassingly so yeah. at certain parts, but of course it's everything people have said about it.
Yeah. It's kind of a garbage movie.
It is. It's the exact same movie. I mean, that's the same thing. I don't want to like, it's right. You're not going to hear anything right now that you haven't heard before. It's the exact right. same plot, the exact same movie. There's one scene though that I was kind of like shaking my head SMH at Ed Helms' character, spoilers for Hangover 2.
Here they come, everyone.
Gets fucked in the ass by a he-she in
right.
Thailand.
Right. It's
and
funny,
they,
though.
They own it. And I'm not, it's not necessarily funny, but I'm like, wow, they really just like one of their beloved characters.
Yeah.
And they kind of make a reference to it in the movie that this character is like problematic. He's a psychopath in that when he drinks or gets, you know, blackout drunk or drugged, he becomes an animal. So he's not the pure squeaky clean guy. But he gets fucked in the ass, and they don't make any apologies for it. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. I've never really seen that before, where they take a character that you kind of like, and he's kind of the anchor of the
right.
the horrible group of right. friends, aside from Doug. And as my name being Doug, I am so annoyed that the most annoying voiced
yeah.
actor in the world is also named Doug.
He is not the best. It is, like, I agree with you. Like, hey, they committed to that bit, but at the same time, like, what's the joke except that, haha, he got fucked in the ass. It's just there's, you know,
no, you get to see a penis
long
too.
Tradition
connected
of
to
like
boobs.
Anything gay is funny just because it's gay, and it's
right.
like there's no joke there except well, that a guy had anal sex,
and
like,
that was and
which
that,
lots of guys do on
right.
a regular basis, and it's not funny,
right? And that's my point, in that there's no joke, but I'm just kind of
sure.
amazed at like this
sure.
is this is the plot point,
right?
That remember when he got fucked in the ass, and then you know it happened and.
Right.
We talk about it, and then we
right.
move on.
Right.
You know, it's
yeah.
very weird.
It's just strange that it's supposed to be super funny, but whatever.
And then I saw Bad Teacher, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
It gave me a vibe of Observe and Report. It's very... Some parts didn't work for me, and
yeah.
Cameron Diaz can be problematic. I think that she's not the most slick comedic actress. I'm not sure how to put that. She's not... doesn't have the best timing, doesn't have always the best
right.
instincts.
Right.
But she... commits herself and devotes herself to this movie, and Jason Segel is always fun to watch, and he's always usually funny, except when he's interviewed on TV.
I saw him on The Daily Show.
Oh my god, he's just so yeah. dry and just like
yeah.
so
he's,
meek.
He's overdoing like the whole sincerity
yeah.
thing.
Just like be funny, dude.
You know
just...
I'm a sincere person when I refer to it as the sincerity thing.
Well, just like you're doing the father thing, the
yeah,
podcast
yeah, yeah.
thing.
I'm doing the husband thing right now.
I liked it. And I like it even more having, you know, like, kind of thinking back on it. Some parts of it, again, this movie did a lot of things that I think I just kind of talked about in The Hangover 2, where it's like, wow, I can't believe they're really doing that. And it is
right.
a hard R, and it's, you know.
Yeah, well, last summer, all these rated R comedies came out, right? And Bridesmaids was, like, the biggest one, but The Hangover 2 made a bunch of money. Bad Teacher made over $100 million. Horrible Bosses made over $100 million.
Yeah.
And I recognized that, like, Hall Pass came out early.
Yeah.
It was R, but it came out in, like, February. And I don't know if it made a bunch of money. But wait, it doesn't matter. The point is this.
Wait, written by Pete Jones? Hall Pass?
Chicago's Pete Jones. Bridesmaids, I think, is sort of widely recognized as, like, the best of those movies. Yeah. Bad Teacher got kind of a bum rap, I think. A lot of people didn't like it or just didn't care. And I think Bad Teacher's a little bit better than, certainly better than Hangover 2. And yeah. I would watch it before Horrible Bosses also, which has been on a lot lately. And if I have to pick between the two, I'll probably watch Bad Teacher.
Horrible Bosses, I think, as a complete package, doesn't work for me. Yeah. I don't care to watch the whole movie.
Yeah.
But there's certain scenes in Horrible Bosses that I find really funny. Mostly stuff with Charlie Day.
Yeah.
Where they're doing, the cocaine explodes in their faces, and he's like, they're talking really fast.
The ting-tings, and like...
Yeah. It is really, really funny, but...
I like the Jamie Foxx scenes, also.
Yeah, and I like the scenes with Jennifer Aniston with the hot dog. But that's a moot point.
Yeah, it's like a cow's opinion.
It's a moot point, Patrick. So, Bad Teacher, I enjoyed. Actually, my wife wasn't crazy about it. And
was
at
that
one
your first
point,
fight?
It was. Honeymoon's over.
Are you sleeping on the couch? Are you in the doghouse?
That's why I've got a crick in my neck. I've been sleeping on the sofa.
Are you in the doghouse?
The doghouse. I'm in the doghouse. I at one point, halfway through the movie, she leaned over. She's like, do you like this? And I'm like, yeah.
was it during the car wash scene?
I was chuckling. I was like, yeah. I was pitching a tent, if you will.
You guys had a camp out?
We did. We watched it in the outdoors. Lots of extension cords. Patrick, what have you seen lately?
Oh, what haven't I seen? No, I haven't seen a lot of stuff because everything I watch now is for some purpose.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I can't, like, double up and talk about, like, here's a movie that I watched that I'm also doing a review for.
Double up.
But here's two things I did see that I won't be talking about anywhere else. I don't think. One is a movie called Shark Night.
In 3D?
I saw it in 2D.
I saw it in 4D.
I rented
it. I'm watching it right now.
From the Red Box. The Red Box. Wow, what a piece of garbage that movie is. And it makes me sad. Like, I did not have... I feel like my expectations were pitched appropriately for the movie Shark Night. Like,
yeah.
The movie tells you up front, hey, it's called Shark Night, everyone. But, like, when I was first reading about it, I was on board because it was called Shark Night and it was going to be 3D. And it was like, oh, here's people in swimsuits being attacked by sharks.
Just almost comparable to our experience watching Piranha 3D.
Right.
Which is not a perfect movie by any means. And it honestly didn't even deliver in all the levels I wanted it to. But it met certain expectations in that it's called Piranha 3D.
And it was kind of fun.
It was definitely fun to see in, like, with a crowd.
Yeah. Shark Night's first, which we did not, because there were, I think, five people in the theater.
I just meant, I just meant you and me, by the way. I mean, like, a crowd. I meant, like, not by myself in front of my TV on my sofa. In the theater.
Shark Night's first problem is that it's PG-13. And it's like, well, already, you're not going to deliver the things that Shark Night should be delivering.
No, it needs an underwater ballet with Kelly Brooks. And the other chick.
Porn chick. She's a porn chick.
I don't care about that porn chick. Kelly Brooks is
she's
a vision.
She's pretty, and I want her to be my mom.
Your mom? Then I want to fuck your mom. More so than I do already right now. Which is a lot.
Well, Shark Night has Sarah Paxton, who I became a fan of after seeing The Innkeepers, which I've talked about on the podcast before, the Ty West movie that just came out on DVD and Blu-ray that I recommend to everyone. It's one of my favorite movies that I've seen so far this year, and she's great in it. And she's in a swimsuit the whole movie. Catherine McPhee, who I think is very pretty, spends the majority of her screen time in a swimsuit. But again, it's like, but you've somehow made this movie horrible and boring. And it's directed by a guy named David R. Ellis, who's a former stunt coordinator and second unit director in the long tradition of, like, action movie directors who use their middle initial when they turn to directing. who started out, he made Final Destination 2, easily the best of the Final Destination movies.
Are you being sarcastic?
I'm being totally serious. Like, Final Destination 2...
I cannot delineate any Final Destination movie.
No, the second one is way better than the other one.
Does it have Devin Sawa in it?
It does not.
What? I am uninterested.
It does have Ali Larter.
I am more interested.
It does not have Kerr Smith.
Less interested.
Our Twitter follower. It's definitely head and shoulders the best of the Final Destination movies. Then he made a movie called Cellular.
I like Cellular.
Of which I am a fan, yes. Yeah. I've made a case for Cellular in the past. And
not
I was like,
Phone Booth, but Cellular.
Right. Here's a guy who's like... making an interesting career for himself, making sort of genre movies that are a little bit better than you expect them to be. Then he goes and makes Snakes on a Plane. And Snakes on a Plane is horrible garbage.
And you probably thought that was the one that was going to break him into the next tier of directing.
And yet it's the movie that apparently taught him every bad habit he knows, because now it's like he's forgotten how to direct a movie. It's a fascinating thing to watch. And then he made Final Destination, the fourth one, which is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Not just the worst Final Destination movie, but one of the worst.
But is it the worst Final Destination movie also?
It is also.
Well, in his defense, though, I have to imagine it's pretty hard to direct sharks. They are wild animals. Well,
so Shark Knight is just boring and terrible and, like, has some small sense of self-awareness, I think. I mean, the fact that it's called Shark Knight, but there's a scene where this character whose arm has been bitten off is like asking to see his girlfriend, and he says something about like, she's the only part of me I can't afford to lose, and it's like, I think that's supposed to be funny because you're missing an arm right now,
right?
But I'm not positive. Shark Knight consists of like characters routinely go, and by the way, the sharks are in a lake, they're lake sharks. Routinely
those
going,
are the most dangerous kind
going
of sharks.
Back into the water, and it's like, I know in horror movies, characters make bad decisions, right? Every Friday the 13th movie. But, like, you gotta give me something. There's no reason for that guy to get on the jet ski right now when he knows there's sharks in the water. And then at some point, they fall into the water, and then they splash around in the water, and, like, there's a cloud of red around them. And that's literally it, over and over again. Like, every once in a while, we cut to some underwater green photography with, like, terrible CGI sharks. Like, do you remember that one bad CGI shark on Lost? That one time where it went to the crazy, like, underwater city?
Maybe,
that
yeah.
long, that was, like, the big reveal. And there's, like, this crazy CGI shark. Get a real shark. The only other shark is, like, this rubber shark that a guy's trying to kill with a spear. It's just, it's, everything about it is so incompetent and not fun. And, like, you can be silly and bad, but you have to be fun. And
yeah.
Shark Knight is no fun at all.
What you're describing to me, and again, I have not seen Shark Knight, but again, the Piranha, the movie expectation that we have, or that you had when you rented Shark Knight, you're expecting this might be a fun B movie.
Right.
A really enjoyable experience. Paul Scheer's in Shark Knight, right?
Paul Scheer's in Piranha.
Okay. That's what okay. Then yes. I was listening to the podcast, How Did This Get Made, about Punisher.
Yes.
And he talks about
Punisher Warzone
with Lexi something, the director. It's actually very good. If you want to listen to a podcast, don't listen to other podcasts. Only listen to this movie. Sorry. Rewind. Never mind all that. He was just comparing like how when you commit to a premise, mm-hmm. That even if the premise is to do something completely absurd or completely silly or completely B movie, you should own it. And, you know, I agree.
Right. You know, I'm not a fan of watching stuff, ironically, but even on that level, I don't think you can have any fun with Shark Knight.
Did you watch Roger Rabbit, ironically?
I did. The other movie I saw was The Raven.
Raven?
Starring John Cusack, who I just talked about. We just did a piece about some of our favorite actors, and I said John Cusack's one of my favorite actors. And then here comes The Raven to kind of fuck me up a little.
You know what's crazy about that, too? I have not seen The Raven. I know it didn't get good reviews at all.
No.
I don't remember a time in which John Cusack has pimped his movie more than The Raven.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's been more visible. He did a Q&A session on Twitter yesterday, or by the time this drops, last week. He was on Stern.
He came to C2E2, like, you know, Chicago's his home, whatever. But, like, he was doing press for The Raven. He doesn't typically do a ton of press for movies.
I read this article in NJ.com, which I assume is, like, New Jersey's newspaper's website. And I almost said at first that the website was kind of quoting the Stern interview. But no, he went to the offices and was interviewed for The Raven.
Wow.
And life and like Cubs and whatever and sports and whatever.
Right.
But man, and then it comes out and this is why I don't respect any opinion Stern has on movies. Because he was like, I loved it. It was great. Action, history.
It's, you know, it's not worse than Shark Knight, but it's one of these movies where, like, nothing quite works. Like, and I'm down for the premise, even. Like, I'll take a movie where, like, Edgar Allan Poe is actually, like, a crime solver, you know?
But again, what about a vampire hunter? What if he was a vampire?
See, that, to me, is just irony for the sake of irony. Yeah. Just like, isn't this weird? But, you know, Shakespeare in Love, which you've talked about recently, kind of does the same thing, where it reverse engineers a lot of Shakespeare's work. And I'm fine with that. Like, make up a story about how he wrote a lot of these things.
Yeah.
The Raven goes a different way, where, like, he's already written all this stuff. All they try and reverse engineer is, like, the last few days of his life, which are kind of a mystery, although not really, because he was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and it's like, that's probably how he died, everyone. Not what the Raven suggests. But it's like, the first half feels like community theater. Like, even John Cusack's performance, like, does not work. He's miscast, and I understand why they cast him, because he's sort of smart and brooding and mysterious, and it's like, sure, he'll play Edgar Allan Poe. He feels very miscast. Everyone does. And it just, none of it works. There's bad, like, CGI blood, and there's sequences that it's trying to be Seven, and there's, like, sequences where it's trying to be Saw, and James McTeague, I want to say. I might have that wrong, but he did V for Vendetta.
Okay.
Which is an okay movie. That's, I mean, fine. Not perfect, but, right. Like, feels better than The Raven. The Raven feels like a movie that has been on the shelf for 3 years and edited,
but it hasn't
re-edited
been
a bunch of times. Not that I'm aware of, right. No. It just, none of it works at all. And there was something else that I wanted to say. The first half, it seems to be like the guys who wrote it, and it was written by two people. I don't remember the names, but I remember a male and a female, and the female's last name is Shakespeare. And I just wanted somebody to say, like, what do you want? It ain't Shakespeare. So you can say, like, yes, it is. they seem to have, like, researched Edgar Allan Poe on Wikipedia, maybe. And so it's like, how many of his stories and poems can we reference? His first long scene, he's in a bar shouting, like, I'm Edgar Allan Poe. Who recognizes one of my poems? And it's like, so that, it's like Edgar Allan Poe for dummies. I don't know. It was a frustrating movie and felt very, very long. I was checking my phone. I don't wear a watch, but I was looking at the time on my phone a lot during
the
movie.
So, quote the podcast, Nevermore.
Two bad movies that I guess no one should see. Shark Knight and The Raven.
Not to sound completely amateurish or simple, but is The Simpsons take on The Raven, like, the best modern day?
It might be. You know what? When Masters of Horror was a thing on Showtime, Stuart Gordon actually did an hour-long thing on The Black Cat. And it's the same kind of premise that, like, it's Jeffrey Combs playing
Edgar. Yeah, we watched that recently, right?
Perhaps?
For one of our marathons, a scary movie thing. I absolutely remember A Black Cat. It was like a movie that has three parts.
No. That, you're thinking of The Cat from Hell and Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Those are the same things. Edgar Allan Poe.
Jeffrey Combs plays Edgar Allan Poe, and they kind of do the same thing. That, like, here's what inspired him. He has writer's block. And I would say that's a lot better. That works a lot better than The Raven, and it's frustrating, because I really do go into every movie wanting to like it. I had my hopes up for Shark Knight. I had my hopes up, and I knew the reviews for The Raven were bad, but I was like, but maybe it'll be one of these things that, like, I like. And I feel like, we don't have a bad rap on this podcast, but there are some people who seem surprised when we like a movie, and maybe it's because we're called F This Movie, and it seems like we exist just to, like, take a dump on movies, yeah. But most of the time we like stuff, or we want to talk about stuff that we like. We're not here to just, like, talk about garbage or shit on movies.
No, absolutely not. Suck. I think there's an impression out there amongst some people, and I won't name people's names or whatever. And I think it's a minority, because if you've listened to the show more than one or two episodes, you know who we are and what we like. But I think there is an impression, if you do see the title of the podcast and do kind of like a lot of the stuff we do on Twitter, or even like the descriptions on Facebook or whatever, they're irreverent.
Right.
But if there's anything that I know, and I know you pretty well, and I know myself, and I know JB and the rest of the cast, that we're pretty sincere and pretty earnest, and we go into things wanting to like them. I've never had that bone in my body that says, I'm going to watch this as a joke.
Right. Lots of, like, writing about movies, like, critics get excited when something's bad, because, like, ooh, it's just very easy to be, like, snarky.
It's easy to write about bad stuff.
Absolutely.
It's hard to write about. I'm going to make a dumb comparison. I just recently watched a trailer called Ruby Sparks.
Yes.
And
I have
no idea if this movie will be good. It could very easily be horrible,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I watched the trailer, and I was so expecting just to, like, I was, like, it was work, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this, because I don't like to watch things that I don't, that I think I might not enjoy. And it surprised me, because it wasn't, and don't get me wrong, it's not like the funniest or the most uplifting trailer, but it was like, this is fun, and it seemed very light, and I don't know
it
how to...
It piqued your interest enough to want to see it.
Yeah, and it just kind of, like, it instead of, like, being heavy-handed and, like, it almost had a Midnight in Paris, like, they're going to do something fantastical.
Okay.
And I hope they don't explain, I hope it just is, like, a fun thing that they just embrace, and instead of, like, doing a whole half hour of, like, well, what's the MacGuffin behind this? It doesn't matter. Just be a good movie. Just be fun. Just be enjoyable.
Right.
And even bad, like, even, not bad, but dark movies or horror movies can be fun.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why every movie should be fun. Every movie
I don't say every movie should be fun, because there are
certainly... I guess not. A Martha, Marcy May, Marlene should not be fun.
Right, and even horror movies that work in a certain way, like, they're not fun. They're effective, and they are upsetting.
Okay,
they're not fun.
I retract.
Thank you. Jeez, you just want every movie to be fun, you want there to be a cut every 3 seconds, and you only want explosions.
Quoth the rabbit, nevermore.
Let's talk about Roger Rabbit with that segue. How could we not?
I know, thank you.
We've had several requests to talk about Roger Rabbit. I have nothing to say about it.
Here it is, Patrick. I pulled out the box.
Okay, the Vista Series DVD.
On the cover, I'm going to describe, there's a cab, a rabbit. Another rabbit, Jessica Rabbit, she's not really a rabbit.
Yeah, what else do you need to know?
And a guy.
It's about this guy with these crazy cartoon friends.
Looks like Danny DeVito. He's got a hat there. He's got his cat.
Some crazy drawings and sketchy sketches.
Yeah, there's some sketchy stuff going on here. Very adult movie.
Yes.
I had not... I watched Roger Rabbit when I was I think with everyone else. It came out in what, 88? I don't think I saw it in 88.
All right.
I think I saw it on video, as I did most often. I didn't go to the theater as much as you did when I was a kid.
This was right after they had opened the theater down the street, the second run theater down the street from my house. This played about a year after that place reopened.
Okay.
So I was able to go because I could get in.
Yeah, I never went to the theater that often. My parents would take us occasionally. It was always a big event. Like we saw Lady and the Tramp. We saw The Right Stuff.
Good movies.
Absolutely. So I'm pretty sure I saw this on video. And I think as most kids that don't have opinions and or taste, if there's cartoons and if there's commotion and energy and passion and chaos and jokes that are obviously jokes, even if they don't work as jokes, like, a kid will respond to that.
Right.
And I remember really, really loving this movie when I was a kid. Like, I think as most people out there, if you're listening, I got to think the majority of people, I think there's some people out there who have never liked it or that have issues with it. This might be a teaser for your next thought. But I think a lot of people out there would be lying to themselves if they had said when they were 12 that they didn't love the movie.
I think people still love it. I think it's pretty universally beloved.
It's made by your favorite director. Well, not your favorite. The director of your favorite film.
Correct.
What's his name again? Tinto Brass.
Tinto Brass, director of Caligula. Robert Zemeckis. This
Paul
was his next,
W.S. Anderson.
This was his next movie after Back to the Future, because this started shooting in 86, and it didn't come out until 88.
Well, it makes sense, because there was a lot of post-production, a lot of energy to make this thing happen.
I'm going to have a hard time organizing my thoughts, because there's, like, all these things I want to say.
Do you want to talk about the cover some more? There's this guy, right? He's driving this cab.
It's about a guy who drives a cartoon cab.
This rabbit, he's crazy.
He's a rabbit.
This rabbit.
I don't know his name.
This rabbit's crazy. He's got a bow tie. He's got some Mickey Mouse gloves.
What, does he think he's people?
A buck tooth. Look at that.
I think the movie is pretty universally beloved, so I apologize to anybody I offend with what I say about the movie, which is not that I don't like it. But even going back to 1988, we talk a lot of times, you and I, about, like, what is a movie that you saw as a kid where you first started to, like, form opinions? Where the first movie you saw, basically, that you didn't like, because you talk about, like, for years there was no bad DuckTales. It was
absolutely
like, you just like everything because you're a kid.
Listen.
And everything's great.
You kind of...
there's no bad DuckTales.
You went past that pretty quickly. Just to clarify, the cartoon DuckTales, premiering after school on WGN in Chicago. I'm sure it was on KTLA or something in Los Angeles, or I don't know what's in New York.
Yeah.
WNY
DuckTales.
DuckTales, taking a Disney franchise with the Scrooge McDuck. And I watched it, and I was like, you know what? They're not the best cartoons, but there's not one episode of DuckTales that's bad.
He swims in the pile of money like it's a pool.
This is what I'm expecting. It gives me what I want. What is going on with our voices?
So, I've talked before about, like, seeing Spaceballs in, like, 1987, and that was a movie that I was like, no, or Harry and the Hendersons. There's these, Jewel of the Nile. These are the first movies that I'm like, I don't know about these movies. Honestly, in Roger Ebbett, which I was super primed to see, dying to see it, it was the guy who had made Back to the Future. It was Steven Spielberg, who was, like, as a kid, that was one of the only director's names that, like, you knew. That was a brand.
I think for most adults, it's still one of the only director's names they know.
Like, as an 11-year-old, you're just like, I don't know who made a lot of the movies that I love, but I know Steven Spielberg, because he's the guy behind Amazing Stories.
He's the guy who ghost-directed Poltergeist.
So I was really excited to see Roger Rabbit. It spoke to a lot of things that I liked. You know, I was into cartoons. I loved the idea of, like, humans and cartoons interacting. There was just all these things about it that had me super excited to see
it. Love Truman-era American politics, pre-Eisenhower.
Huge film noir fan. Absolutely. Loved Chinatown. So I saw the movie, and there were things about it that I loved. And then there was always this feeling like, something doesn't quite come together for me. And I've seen the movie probably 5 times since then, and I have never lost that feeling. Even as I get older, I can appreciate certain things that they were trying to do more.
Yeah.
Like the whole film noir aspect, like the whole unused Chinatown script that basically builds the framework of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Very weird.
Yeah, but I don't think it totally works. I understand what they're trying to do. I just don't think it all comes together. I think it's a movie that has to be admired for what it does on a technical level. I think it has these scenes that are inspired. I think it has moments that, like, we are lucky to have on film, like the whole dueling pianos thing, which is one of the things that people talk about.
Right.
We're lucky to have that sequence. And if for no other reason, if Roger Rabbit was terrible everywhere else, we're lucky to have that scene. So I will always have some affection for Roger Rabbit. And I don't dislike the movie, but it's never come together in a way that has made me love it.
I haven't seen it 5 times. I saw it maybe once or twice.
Like
when
two
I was...
times? One time?
Maybe like three times. Treat.
Two, three times.
I saw it a couple times when I was 12, 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
It was kind of on rotation with like Goonies and, you know, in the video collection.
Which is crazy because it's not a kid's... I mean, there's like... Because there's cartoons in it, it's like, I like this. I'm a kid.
That was what struck me now. I watched it a week ago for this podcast, and I didn't remember any of, like, the plot, you know? And obviously, not even...
By the way, I watched it 2 days ago. I remember very little of the plot.
So I didn't remember that. And honestly, I remember you were... I watched it for the purposes of this podcast. I watched it before you had watched it. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know when the last time you saw it, Patrick, but... Mm-hmm. Don't watch it with your son around, even though, because I didn't remember the murders that took place. Mm-hmm. And the Jessica Rabbit stuff is funny, like, haha, she's buxom and sexy, but it's almost, like, it's weird, it's kind of icky, it's kind of like, this is bizarre.
Right.
And I get the joke, and I understand why they're doing it, but it just, it's not for kids.
And that seems to be the only spot in the movie where, and I would have been thrilled to like revisit Roger Rabbit and realize like, oh my gosh, the movie is commenting on all these things about these cartoons that we didn't question as kids that like with adult eyes mean something else. But they only really do that with Jessica Rabbit, which is like, isn't it weird how like sexed up some of these characters were, you know? And so they're sort of calling attention to that and commenting on that. But nowhere else in the movie is the relationship between like cartoons and the viewer really commented on in that way. I don't think. Maybe
the Betty Boop thing briefly, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So I saw it for the purposes of this podcast, as I've said 3 times now. And I do not, I don't know Chinatown. I've seen Chinatown twice. I haven't seen it in years. I don't remember the plot all that well. If memory serves, it's kind of a confusing movie on purpose. Right?
Yeah.
So in the plot of this, but here, let me just get very specific for a second. The movie opens with an alcoholic, like hardcore alcoholic private detective who his brother was killed by a toon.
Right.
Is hired by Maroon, the owner of the cartoon studio, to take pictures of his stars. Roger Rabbit is the star. Roger Rabbit's wife, who he thinks is fooling around on Roger Rabbit with this guy named Acme.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what I just said, by the way. So he was hired to take pictures. So, like, well, why do you want to take pictures? Well, because Roger Rabbit is obsessed with Jessica. She has a hold on him. She's poisoned to him. And he is going crazy because he thinks that she's cheating on him.
Yeah.
So go take pictures and prove it.
Right.
And I don't understand that at all. Am I missing? I'm not.
No, it's like find evidence so we can cut the cord.
You know? Right. Okay. That's what my impression is.
If Roger Rabbit knows.
But what that is not what people do. And I mean, it makes sense on paper in terms of like this one guy's
divorce.
This one guy's obsessed that his wife is cheating on him. But she's poisoning him. He's obsessed with her. He's not going to let her go, even when he determines that, like, has hard facts that they're playing patty cake together. So he takes pictures, and that's just all nonsense. That's the that's the pre-credits nonsense plot that leads into the next plot, which is Roger Rabbit is framed for murder.
Right. Which is part of a bigger plot of, like, and that's where kind of Chinatown idea comes in, which is, like, the building, the expansion of a city and progress sort of in air quotes through shady means, you know, which is sort of what Chinatown is, which is definitely what Roger Rabbit turns out to be.
Right.
And again, the thing you just described, like, that's interesting to me in that it takes this sort of hard-boiled detective story but applies it to cartoons, but then it doesn't necessarily play the game of, like, that Roger Rabbit is like this delirious, like, fool who's obsessed with his wife, where it's like the way that, like, Baby Herman walks off screen and is this cigar smoking, like, grouch.
Yeah.
Where he has two sides of his personality. I'm trying to think, there's another example of this.
In Roger Rabbit?
No, in some other media, and I can't think of what it is, but, like, when Roger Rabbit walks off screen, he's basically still Roger Rabbit. So it's this weird mix of, like, you're getting this backstage cartoon drama, but the guy is still the cartoon character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's this weird thing where they don't try and play the game where, like, Roger Rabbit is half drunk all the time and, like, has 5 o'clock shadow and he's just bleary-eyed because he can't sleep because he's thinking about Jessica or any of that stuff. Like, he's still crazy, wacky Roger Rabbit.
Yes and no.
So that's interesting to me, but like, I the movie's trying to play all these different games, and I don't know that they work, all of them.
I'd say yes and no to that point, in that, like, obviously Roger Rabbit does not become an alcoholic. I mean, it doesn't have to be a complete switch, you know, 180 in terms of, like, his wacky persona. But, like, if anything else, like, in the cartoons, he is a two-dimensional, I mean, all puns and jokes aside, but he's, like, the rabbit that's goofy and has to look after Baby Herman.
Right.
And when he's out of that, he's still goofy,
right?
But he's desperately in love with his wife, and, you know, is right, kind of obsessed with her. And when he sees the pictures of her playing patty cake, he, like, flips out, and then he drinks and he flips out.
Yeah, I guess it's just that they're not trying to, like, what the hell is the example? Maybe The Simpsons does it, where it's like maybe Krusty the Clown, like. We have on-camera Krusty and then off-camera, but, you know, there's a little bit of bleeding that goes on there, too. But, like, that's the example of, like, here's what the guy's like in real life. The Roger Rabbit doesn't try and play that game so much with Roger Rabbit. He's basically still Roger Rabbit.
Right. Well, I think they almost have to because he's the hero of the movie, along with the detective.
Right.
So he has to be almost vanilla. You know, he can't have too much depth to him because otherwise it's like, well, he can't have a dark side. He's got to be only purely good.
Right.
And that the dark side are for the funnier characters, the side characters, the supporting cast.
But then the movie's also trying to make a case for, like, the need for these cartoons and, like, the purpose they serve and the need, like, for laughter and all that. And that's all good. It's a movie that's trying to do a lot of things, and I don't know how many of them it does successfully. The thing it does super successfully, obviously, is blend live action and animation.
It's what Zemeckis is kind of known for, famous for.
Yeah, I mean, he's always trying to push things in certain directions, and sometimes
I learned that from What Lies Beneath.
Sometimes it's to the detriment of the story. I mean, even something like Death Becomes Her, which is not a great movie, like, is definitely trying to push CGI effects in a certain direction, and it kind of does, but, like, it almost feels like an exercise just to do that, you know what I mean? And I don't know that Roger Rabbit is only an exercise. I mean, I think it supersedes that, but I don't think it totally works as a movie. And it's interesting to watch. We are so spoiled, I think, now.
Oh, yeah.
Because anything is possible. And so some of the effects in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, while I think they still hold up, they look a little bit creaky in that the animation isn't super smooth all the time, and you can kind of tell sometimes that they're interacting with something that isn't there. I think they're really good about it.
Sure.
But every once in a while, it kind of bleeds through. That,
don't you
like,
think
okay,
that has that gives the movie a little charm, though, too?
To some, but not...
Not to you?
No. To me, it's fine. I have no problem with...
Dead inside?
Yes. Okay. I'm not dissing what Roger Rabbit pulls off. I think it's still amazing. I'm just saying, I don't think you could show it to a 14-year-old now and have them say, like, holy shit, that's amazing what they're
doing.
But
do you think when you were 14 years old, you were like, holy shit, those are amazing effects?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think I was. I was just enjoying a movie because you're a kid. And I know that obviously there's different levels of cynicism. And I think some 14-year-olds in a lot of ways are more cynical, in some ways are less cynical, but are way more having everything at their fingertips with their cell phones and everything else that they can get instant access. Even watching any of the lower tier studios putting out animation, it's all CGI now. It's Toy Story 3 and the Pixar stuff is the best, obviously, but even the worst of it is still great looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Compared to, 20 years ago, the worst animation was like, well, this is just, you could tell it's less frames per second. It's not as smooth. It's definitely made by Koreans, in Korea. I'm not being racist. But I think that when I was 14, I watched it. I wasn't like, wow, you just accept it.
Well, I didn't. I mean, I had some awareness, I guess, and maybe because of just who I was at age 11 when I saw this movie, like, I had done some reading. I had some awareness of Who Framed Roger Rabbit outside of just this movie that I want to see. I knew that they were pioneering these new effects and combining live action with animation. And so I definitely went into it like ready to be wowed by that. And I was. And I still am. I think what they do is amazing. But as I was watching it, and my point is, I think the movie has problems. I think it got a pass and will always get a pass for its technical achievements. I think no matter what, people are going to be like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit is great because they were the first to do this thing in this amazing way. They maybe weren't the first to ever do it, but like they were the first to do it really well.
It's done in Mary Poppins,
Right. But what they do is incredible. And so I think it gets a little bit of a pass. And again, for those sequences like, oh, it's so neat to see all these cartoon characters in the same movie. It's great for the dueling piano sequence. There's these things that people are willing to give it a pass because all these things work. But because of what it accomplishes technically, I think people are willing to say it's great. And that's fine. That's all the reason you need, I guess. But I just fast forward to like 2010 when Avatar comes out. And a bunch of people, me among them, are like, Avatar's garbage. And like, what Avatar does is no less impressive than what Roger Rabbit did in 88. But because anything is possible, we've become so cynical that like we don't give a shit about the effects anymore. It's like that story is cliche. The writing is garbage. Like we're suddenly looking at those things. And I don't think people were with Roger Rabbit. That's my point.
Don't you think that, just going back to that example of a 14-year-old cynic.
Yes.
That looks at this movie and says, I'm unimpressed. I don't care because
Space Jam does it better.
Because A, I don't think a 14-year-old these days, and by the way, at 14, I did not know what film noir was.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that, but 14-year-olds today definitely don't know. Even there were a few among us that did, unless they're like sons of film teachers or whatever.
Right.
I'm like, your kid might know what film noir is at 14.
He's gonna. Sit down, kid. We're watching Out of the Past.
I think that that same kid, though, looks at, and the only example that pops in my head is like Star Wars. And Star Wars is kind of a bad example because the effects in Star Wars are still pretty awesome.
Well, especially now that he's gone back and fixed them.
Thank you. But there are some, just any effect that uses stop motion or effects that kind of has a very poor green screen, chroma key effect. Any kid these days will just roll their eyes like a fucking idiot, they all are. and that's to be expected. And so that you can't necessarily, I'm just saying you can't use that example or comparison to say like, they're not going to like Roger Rabbit now because they've seen Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you love Avatar now. So what the fuck happened?
Oh, I don't know. That's well documented on this podcast. Just like my progression from hating Avatar to being like, I enjoy Avatar. It's the same movie. It's me that's changed.
But here, I think the thing with Roger Rabbit is, for me at least, I watch this movie and I am... A couple things, and we've talked about this before on the Goonies podcast, or any podcast in which we talk about nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
A part of me is taken back to that time when I was 12. not so much with this, only because I didn't see this as much as I did other movies. Like, mm-hmm. I saw Back to the Future tons of times. I saw Goonies. I saw Grease 2 tons of times. My sister loved Grease 2. It was one summer, every...
She loves to bowl and bowl and rock and roll.
Her and her friend Kelly, every day in the summer...
Grease 2?
...would put Grease 2 on.
That's fascinating to me. Not even Grease 1. Not even, like, the good Grease.
I think part of it
by
was...
the way, the good Grease is not that good.
Good Grease is great. Come on. But I think that part of her was...
Grease is great.
Part of her was like, this is my Grease. Because my mom loves Grease.
I sort of understand
that. No, yeah. I completely agree with that. But part of it, okay, watching Roger Rabbit is going back and being in as a kid, watching it again. But then, as the adult... I'm willing to accept some of the flaws. I like some of the noir. I like some of the jokes they're trying to do that maybe I'm appreciating more as an adult. My biggest thing with it, and I'm just going to get really specific and kind of obvious, is the end of the movie, I think, is just like, what the... it goes on forever.
Yeah.
It just... the movie is, how long? 107 minutes, I think.
Okay.
I roughly. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't... By the way, what's the deal with, like, DVD cases and covers? Time on a cover, the time of the movie, the length of the movie, is probably top five most important things that I want to know about. Like, I don't care about your dumb plot summary. I don't care about what the critics have to say about it.
Right.
Or even all the different technical things. I want to know how long it is. And it's always the hardest thing to find. Yeah. I'm so annoyed by that.
All right. Rant over.
Thank you. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Did you find the running time?
Fuck no.
Keep talking. I'll find it.
It's not the longest movie. It's definitely a long movie for a kid's movie.
104.
104 minutes. 104 minutes is long for a kid's
movie.
Felt
like 107.
especially when a lot of movies today are, you know, a lot of kids' movies are 85 to 95 minutes. Yeah. I think that's pretty average. But the end of it, it felt like network long. You know, it felt like, what the hell is going on? The scene in this warehouse, which is also just... you've taken me to the back lots of a studio. You've taken me to Toontown. You've taken me to like a speakeasy. And now you're going to end the movie in a drab warehouse that in the boxes are cool things. But those boxes are, for the most part, shut. It's like, I don't know. And then the whole thrust of the final thing is that, okay, Christopher Lloyd's character is a cartoon in a rubber suit. Oh, I should spoilers?
Spoilers for Roger Rabbit?
I guess, yeah. And, he wants to kill Roger Rabbit and Jessica Rabbit. There's a lot of stuff going on. But he's using Dip, which is his benzene paint thinner ink.
The only thing that can kill a cartoon.
Right. And I kind of like...
Or Bob Hoskins dancing. That also kills cartoons. It's established that there's only one thing that kills a cartoon. But then also if Bob Hoskins does a funny musical number, that also kills cartoons.
Funny. Yes. Funny is in quotes, by the way. So the end of it is that they're trying to kill, and it's this weird James Bondian kind of way, and Jessica Rabbit and Roger Rabbit are strung up, and there's a fire hose shooting Dip at them, and it's very slow, and everyone's like, and it's like, and then it stops, and then it restarts, and then it gets pushed down, but then it gets pushed back, and it's like, what the fuck is going on? Any goodwill I had for the movie in the first hour, because I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
Because we had talked very briefly before we talked about doing this podcast, and I knew that you were kind of like, I never was a huge fan of it. I acknowledge its technical achievements, but I was like, you know what? The first half, I was like, I am on board. This movie it's working, and it still works. And then it chugs into the second half. Yeah. Maybe like you're, not to call back to Network, but your response to Network in the second half, I'm like, I throw my hands up. Like, it just needs to be 20 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
It needs to end in Toontown or something. Like, come on.
Well, the thing about Toontown always bums me out, because when he finally goes into Toontown, it's like, we're excited because we've been waiting for it the whole movie.
Right.
It's referenced. Now we're going to go into this world that's all cartoon. He has talked about, you know, how he hates Toontown. He hates Toons. He doesn't work in Toontown. So now it's like, the guy who doesn't want to go to Toontown has to go to Toontown. That will be interesting, right? He gets there. It's funny. It's like all these cartoons singing this nonsense "Welcome to Our World" song. And then he basically leaves. And it's
he crashes his car. He goes into a building.
So much for that. Like,
he thinks he sees Jessica Rabbit. A girl chases him and he leaves.
Right. Like, that's it for the Toontown segment, and I don't know if it's a budget thing or what, but it's like,
I can't imagine
that didn't really deliver on the promise.
I gotta think that's the easiest stuff that's the cheapest stuff to do, because it's not incorporate. I don't know, it just seems maybe it might be as cheaper
and
or...
The movie was super expensive, too. It cost almost like $80 million, which now is, I mean, romantic comedies cost $80 million. 3D, now, yeah, Shark Knight. But, you know, when you think about, like, Terminator 2 came out 3 years later, it was the first movie to, like, break $100 million, and it was the biggest deal in the world. Yeah. I mean, it made headlines.
Right.
It's only, like, $20 million more than this movie, which had just come out, right. which had come out 3 years ago, you know. Yeah, that's disappointing to me. And at the end, when he's hosing off all of the dip, I'm like, isn't all that just going to blow out into Toontown? Just, like, eat everything? What? Oh, well, whatever. Part of my problem, too, is the mystery. I don't think the mystery is particularly compelling. And I read a little bit about the movie on, like, Wikipedia, which, whatever. But it talks about early drafts of the screenplay where, in one version, Baby Herman was the ultimate villain. In another, Jessica Rabbit was the ultimate villain, which... is truer to a lot of, like, film noir, even though the movie is pointing to her as being the villain the whole time.
Sure.
For them to then say she's the villain is, like, a weird double reveal, because it's like, expect that she won't be, but then she actually is, and it's like, okay.
It's a little Crystal Skull. She's the killer. Oh, she's the killer.
But this movie does that. Like,
yeah.
Judge fucking Doom. Christopher Lloyd is the villain the whole movie, and then guess what? Yes, he's the villain. No, the one twist is the he's reveal. Actually a cartoon.
Which, by the way, they
so
never.
What?
But they also never explain why does he have to be a cartoon?
Right.
What is his? Not to say I need tons of motivation for a kid's, but it's not a kid's movie. You know, need motivation, and I do need to know why do you want to destroy Toontown? You're a fucking cartoon.
Is this a weird Hitler thing?
Huh?
Is this a weird Hitler comparison? Because Hitler was like a self-hating, am I correct? Was Hitler Jewish?
possibly. I think I think people have said he was.
I feel bad not knowing this.
I think he was. I think maybe his like dad was. I don't know.
Okay.
Should we pause the podcast and look it up? Email us all your Hitler theories at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Hitler, I want to say... he had some Jewish upbringing, but I don't know if it was such a... I don't think it was the motivating factor in any of his...
Okay.
But that's maybe my...
Because if you interpret, you know, this dip thing as, like, the final solution, that he wants to wipe all the cartoons off the face of the planet, for him to be a self-hating cartoon goes a little bit towards this Hitler comparison. I'm not suggesting that Who Framed Roger Rabbit is actually a Holocaust parable, but, like... I don't know. That's the only thing I could figure out for making him a cartoon, because...
Yeah, and it would kind of fit, and not to... I don't want to kind of go down this serious road, but it would fit in kind of like the Spielbergian mindset of like kind of the real true villains and true heroes.
Right.
It's an interesting theory. I think that's even... And I honestly, I feel bad. I don't know specifically either if he is...
I thought if anybody would know, you would.
I love war movies. I don't know necessarily Hitler. I've never read My Struggle, Mein Kampf. I've never really read his biography. But I know that that's a lot of... I've heard it a lot, too.
Yes, and that's what I thought to be the case.
And even that kind of...
But I realized as I was saying it, like, oh, if he's not, I sound like a huge dummy.
Even if it's apocryphal, like, kind of the lore, and even if it's not true, it's enough motivation to have it be the kind of guiding principle of the villain.
I don't think it works, and it's fascinating because a lot of that stuff at the end... with Christopher Lloyd is super disturbing, like on a visual level.
When he gets flattened by the steam.
Everything about it. I mean, the cartoon eyes bugging out of his head and him getting dissolved in the dip and like turning into that weird rubber suit. Like, I think I saw it at an age where it didn't scar me, but I bet if I had been like 7, that would have really freaked me out.
Yeah.
In that way that like sometimes I like in kids' movies, like, oh, this is disturbing to see, but not in a way that's like damaging, you know. I don't know. I just. That opening cartoon is great.
Yeah.
Love it. Sets the movie off on the right tone. Dueling pianos, great.
Yeah, real quick
certain
on that.
Certain sequences, great.
You're kind of just, you're dancing around it. This movie incorporates cartoon characters from not just Disney and Warner Brothers, but also from MGM.
Yeah.
There's a Droopy Dog. There, I mean,
Woody Woodpecker shows up at the end. There were a few that they couldn't get licenses to, like
but
Popeye
still, like and... I'm blown away because this is it's a Touchstone picture, which is Disney,
right?
And so Disney, I think Warner Brothers agreed to have their characters in the movie if they had equal screen time, which is why for the most part I think Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse are always in the same scene together,
right?
And same with Daffy Duck and Donald Duck,
right?
But it's really is like, and I don't think you care as a kid like who licenses what products, but. You know, now in my 30s, I'm like, that is really I don't know if that would even happen today with, like, businesses kind of protecting their brand.
It wouldn't.
Foolishly. So much so that's like, you're not even willing to, like, you know that this will be well received and you will benefit from this. But if it benefits right. your competitor also,
right.
they wouldn't be willing to do it. And it's like, man, that's.
And it really was only Spielberg that was able to make that happen.
Sure.
That was able to go to Warner Brothers and say, hey, can we use this stuff? And it's weird because, like, you just talked about the scene with Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse, who they kind of show up during that falling sequence, right? And they right. hand him the parachute and it's an anvil and ha ha ha.
The second time they show up or the end when they show up? You're talking about that?
No, that's their first appearance, right? During the falling?
Well, my point is there's a sequence at the end, and if this is where
they show up again. No, I just think it's weird that, like, those are the two flagship characters for both studios, right? Mickey Mouse, Bugs Bunny. Those are, like, the faces
right.
of Warner Brothers and Disney Animation, respectively. And yet nobody's talking about that scene. Like, we all talk about dueling pianos, that is so much more iconic.
Sure.
And it's using Donald and Daffy, two, you know, quote-unquote lesser characters. I mean, they're not really, but...
I think part of it, too, is because the Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse scene is in Toonland. It's not aside from Bob Hoskins appearing with them, it's not, like, them playing the piano and, like, lots of camera
movements. You just would think that as those two studios, you would want to give those two something to do.
I agree. And in fact, at
the problem is that they're such different characters, too. But
yeah, I guess the two ducks are more. They're fucking ducks.
Yeah. they're self hating ducks.
What I was blown away by was when, at the very end, Christopher Lloyd's character, does he have a name? Aside from Judge Doom, does his cartoon have a name?
Or not that I'm aware of.
So he is flattened by a steamroller, he's dissolved in dip. Bob Hoskins washes everything away. All the dip machine breaks the wall down. All the cartoons flood into the warehouse. They all surround the corpse of Christopher Lloyd's characters, and front and center is Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse. And I'm thinking, like, if anything, I'm so happy that Warner Brothers and Disney and all the other studios agreed to put their property in this.
Yeah.
But I gotta think, was there not a script, like, approval? Because at the end, it's like they're all, like, staring at a tune that tried to kill, that has killed,
right?
That is trying to kill again. They're right. staring at his horrifying corpse, and
the shell of his body.
It really, right. it was. I was like, well, that's weird.
And so, right. So, do we say, like, wow, Robert Zemeckis got away with something really subversive there? Because I felt that about some of his movies in the past.
I think you could say that
are written off as being sentimental, crappy pap. Like, I always felt like Forrest Gump is way more subversive than people give it credit for. Is he getting
away with that? Easy with the Forrest Gump. That might be a future podcast.
Is he getting away with that in Roger Rabbit?
Easy with the Spaceballs reference.
And if so, that's something to make me like it more, honestly, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that he is, and that's why I was kind of shocked, because, again, I'm thinking just, you know, in my corporate mind, and I'm not even a corporate kind of guy, but, like, knowing how much approval even the stupid things in my world need to get done,
right,
and this
right.
is like, well, they're just... People are drawing, like, it's not like they're drawing it blind. They're drawing it around.
Right.
I mean, the cell is kind of like, there's a thing here, and there's the reason why we're drawing it like this and whatever else. And I don't know. So my point simply is, I was so on board, like, from that first cartoon up until I even, like, don't even care about the little MacGuffin of him taking the picture of Patty Cake, even though it doesn't make any sense to me. Even, and I'm not a biggest noir fan, but I just would like something more to sink my teeth into. And then I like when they go to when Jessica Rabbit's introduction, I like that whole, the doing pianos and the penguins delivering food and Betty Boop's appearance. Even that is, I don't think that's Warner or Disney. I think that's another studio also.
Yes.
And then it gets to, like, Toontown, and then that quickly ends. But all these little things that I remember, like the bullets and the gun, we need more of that. And it's so quickly tossed aside.
Gags.
Yeah. It needs more gags. And then the end, like I said, it's a 20, I don't even know how long it is. It felt like 45 minutes. It's probably closer to like 18. But the whole end sequence where the weasels, when Bob Hoskins dances around like a monkey and does, it's a musical number. It's out of left field. He's not particularly good at it.
Well, right. I mean, it's supposed to be sort of reminiscent of Make 'Em Laugh, but like, he's not Donald O'Connor. Like,
right.
It can't compare. And that's one of the things I've always felt about the movie. Every time I go back to the movie, I want to like it more than I do. Because I'm like, on paper, I really should like this. I like Robert Zemeckis.
Right.
I like animation. I like cartoons. I like that it's this movie that blends these two things. I wanted to see it so badly as an 11-year-old. There's so many things. I should like it more. And every time, I like it about the same amount. There's
right.
things about it that I think are so great. And then there's all this other stuff that I'm like, And, you know, to some extent, you may have just put your finger on it. All the stuff with animation is great. Like, It's a movie that loves cartoons. It celebrates what makes them great, what makes them fun, what makes them funny. It loves these characters. You know, I think that they did a great job of making Roger Rabbit this fake cartoon that doesn't exist in the same world as Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse and all this other stuff, but making him a completely viable character who could just as easily exist with all these. You know what I mean? He's not an approximation of all these other things. He's his own thing, but like it totally works. He has a personality. You could see him being a cartoon star.
In fact, didn't they do, I want to say, the couple of movies after Roger Rabbit? Like
I remember before I saw Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Yeah, I think it was Tummy Trouble.
There's a short, right.
And there's a few more. I don't know what they, maybe they were showing before, like kids movies, and I stopped going to kids movies.
Right.
But they're on the DVD.
That's great. I mean, I think that's wonderful.
I think that was part of the reason I wanted to go see Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but part of that was that I just liked when they would put a cartoon before a movie, because you'd always hear like, well, that's what they used to do. And, oh, they're going to bring it back. Like just for this one thing. Cause I'm not a big Honey, I Shrunk the Kids fan.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is, I have not seen it. I want to watch it again because I've not seen it in years, but man, everything about the premise, everything about that appeals to me. I love like going into a different world, but like, and that's maybe another podcast. Maybe. Patrick, what do you think?
Honey, I Shrunk the Podcast. so I think all the stuff with animation works. I think all the human stuff doesn't. I like Christopher Lloyd. I don't think he's a particularly compelling villain. No. I've liked Bob Hoskins a lot in other movies. I understand why he was cast. I think he does a good job doing what he's asked to do in this movie.
Right.
But I don't think he's a very compelling lead character. What's her name? His girlfriend from Blade Runner is not very compelling to me. None of the humans really stand out, and it's like, I guess we just need more of the cartoon stuff.
And there's so much that could, especially if you're going to put it in this world of 1947 Los Angeles before freeways and this noir Chinatown place, so much of it is it's dripping with opportunity.
Right.
And it doesn't really embrace it that much.
And I don't think it ever, you know, one of the things that's so great about Singin' in the Rain is that it finds such a clever hook on which to tell its story, the transition from sound.
Oh, you're talking about the artist.
The transition from silent to sound. Roger Rabbit doesn't, I don't think, find...
Roger Rabbit's a love letter to cinema.
Doesn't really find a hook to be this movie about cartoons and humans. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't really find as much of a reason for being as something like Singin' in the Rain does. If you're going to tell this story that's set in 1947 Hollywood with, you know, cartoons. It doesn't really find a reason. It invents this murder mystery.
And it's the whole thing, too. It's all very, like, impressed with itself for being, like, we're going to tear down all the, like, LA's got the best public transportation system in the world, and we're going to tear it down. Freeways, who, like, billboards. And it would not be wonderful. And it's like, oh, we get it because that's the world we live in now.
Fast food, right. And again, that's some of, like, the Chinatown angle. What I'm saying is this. If you're going to see one movie that blends animation and live action.
You already said Space Jam.
Nope. Cool World. See
Kim Basinger's
Cool World and Brad Pitt and Gabriel Byrne.
Do you think that, and this is the last question.
I saw Cool World in a theater.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I've got a boner.
If you want to see how to not do the things that Roger Rabbit does, see Cool World.
And that might even make you, again, this movie is nothing if not respectable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you got to love certain parts of it, but I have issues with some of the story. My last thing I'll ask you, and again, I know, and the reason I'm kind of, we're not going into certain details, because everyone has their opinion. Everyone's seen this movie. You could maybe agree with parts of our perspectives or not, and that's fine. Go fuck yourself. Do you think that, you've talked before about how this movie was made for you, or this the certain aspects of this movie were made for you. And we've talked about that before on other podcasts. Mm-hmm. Iron Giant comes to mind. Mm-hmm. That the things in Iron Giant, 1950s, space aliens, cartoon, the kind of Russian
voice
fear.
Of Jennifer Aniston.
Absolutely. Hogarth, a character named Hogarth. And a movie like Matinee, which you love, admittedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's lots of movies that are kind of like, absolutely, they're made for you. For me, it might be The Lucky One with Zac Efron.
Right.
Do you think that your disappointment is heightened for Roger Rabbit because you're thinking to yourself, this isn't just a movie that you saw as a kid that you could take or leave, that this movie you had expectations for, you were excited to see, you expected yourself to love it, And it just, it kind of failed on that level.
I mean, yes and no. Yeah, I think initially maybe, like when I saw it in 88. But I mean, the movie's almost 25 years old, which if that makes me feel super old.
But you still can't ever shake. I'm a big believer in, like...
I think I can. Like, I think there's enough distance and there's
knowing
enough...
Knowing you, you can't.
There's enough space between viewings that each time is almost a blank slate. For sure, this time. It had been a while since I've seen it. And sitting down to watch it this time,
no, I
was...
I agree with that, but I still think that you still love the things that it's presenting. It's,
yeah.
You still love, like, the cartoon mixed with this and the noir and all this other stuff.
Yeah, but so, I don't think that... I don't think my problem with the movie is that I should love it more. You know what I mean? Like, I think my problems are the problems. I think, yes, I should love it more, but I think that's almost a separate issue.
Okay.
You know? And again, I do come down on the side of liking it.
Sure.
Because I appreciate so much of what it does, because there are moments that are great. There's a new thing in it that I like even now, pointed out by you, that all the cartoons are standing around the corpse of Christopher Lloyd.
You're welcome. That's what I'm
here for.
That's
something that I hadn't really put together before, but like, yeah, that's something that I appreciate about the movie. And I still always will like the line when Roger Ebbett gets out of the handcuffs and he says, "You could have done that the whole time," and he says, "No, only when it was funny."
Yeah, there's a couple of lines like that, and not to again get too specific right now at the end of the podcast, but like I love when he reveals where himself was shaving a haircut. I know it's like it's very contrived and very kind of overspoken,
right?
But it's just like this earnest like energy for this movie, and it's like yes, do more of that, do more of like this zany, but no, it's so grounded in like my brother's dead and I got to drink
and. And where we have to, like, cheer him up. And so that's his big arc, is that he does the song and dance at the end. And we feel like, okay, he's come around. Now he can be wacky like a cartoon also.
And that, but it's so, like, feels unearned. Because at the end, when he kisses Roger Rabbit and says, like, "I'm healed." And it's like, his eyes are still dead. You know, it's like a shark eye.
Yeah.
Like Shark Knight 3D eyes.
Again, it's nothing against Bob Hoskins. But I have wondered lots of times, even as far back as 88, when I was like, who's that guy? would I like the movie better with somebody else in the lead?
Who were they thinking about casting?
I honestly don't know. No, I don't know. Because I know I think they wanted to go with somebody
who Eric Stoltz was originally cast.
They wanted to go with somebody who was unknown.
And very British.
And very, very Cockney.
It's Roger Rabbit, eh?
And he definitely fits, you know, the mold of this sort of 40s detective kind of a thing. But I don't know if it had been somebody else. Real quick, too, I want to mention, did you happen to read some of the other titles that were thrown around for Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
I don't know if I did. So I'd love to
hear them. It's based, you know, on a book, I believe, called Who Censored Roger Rabbit. So good thing they didn't go with that.
Right.
But there were some other titles that were thrown around, and I have to find those, because can you imagine this movie being called any of these things? Murder in Toontown. Okay, a little on the nose.
Yeah.
Not the worst. Toons.
Love it. Oh no, hate it?
Dead Toons Don't Pay Bills. Okay, I mean, I see you're going for sort of that film noir thing. The Toontown.
But real quick, what is "Don't Pay Bills"? It has to do with anything?
I don't know. It's Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. You know.
I know, but I'm saying don't pay bills. Right. Like what?
No, the movie is about an outstanding check
that
hasn't been paid.
Utility man coming.
The Toontown Trial.
Okay, no trial.
Trouble in Toontown. And Eddie Goes to Toontown. Like, at one point, an executive said, "What about Eddie Goes to Toontown?"
Jesus.
And this movie that's produced by Steven Spielberg that cost $80 million, somebody suggested be called Eddie Goes to Toontown. The last title someone suggested, John Carter.
Please, Patrick. Please.
All right, you got time to do a best worst game real quick before we go?
All the time in the world.
Okay, ready? Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi, a director. Is that the game? I forgot how the game is played. I just have to name the profession of the person you're naming, right? There's a movie that I've talked about with you that I love, and I said at one point, it is the new It's a Wonderful Life.
Drag Me to Hell.
It is about Jack the Ripper. I've gone back on that very hyperbolic statement.
Okay.
But Spider-Man 2 is such a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
And I still, I mean, Evil Dead 2 is great too. It's between those two, Evil Dead 2 and Spider-Man 2.
If you had to pick one.
Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
And his worst. I've not seen all of his movies. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing The Gift, and there's a scene in The Gift I really like a lot, if I remember correctly. I will make that joke until the day I die. I'll have to say Spider-Man 3. Is that lame?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a definite candidate, actually.
Yeah. Man, Spider-Man 3, it's like, especially on the promise of Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 is flawed. I just loved it so much. It was such the perfect movie at the time when I saw it. And then you see Spider-Man 3 expecting just an elevation of that. It's like, oh my God.
I'm super fascinated, too, by people. And it's been coming out more and more lately when people are talking about this reboot, The Amazing Spider-Man, that's coming out this summer, where people very casually throw out, like, I'm kind of interested to see it, especially since I've never been a fan of any of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies.
I'm like, really? I've never heard that. Wow, that's crazy.
And I'm blown away by that. Like, the first one is flawed, and the third one is a mess, but, like,
sure,
there's things to like. Even in 3, right after I saw 3, I was sort of an apologist. I was like, no, because all the movies are about how it's hard being Spider-Man, and that's what 3 is about. No, 3 is a fucking disaster. But
What about you? What's your
favorite? You know what? I was all ready to say, like, The Quick and the Dead as his worst, but I think I have to go with Spider-Man 3, because there's things in The Quick and the Dead
with Sharon Stone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's definitely, again, if he made that movie now, people would be all over it, but, like, he made it in, what, 92, 95, and the Quentin Tarantino video geek generation hadn't taken over yet, so people didn't really know the language of, like, spaghetti westerns, and they didn't even understand what he was referencing. So it's like, what is this movie? Why is Sharon Stone in this? Who's Russell Crowe? But now I think it's sort of, you know, being discovered.
What's your favorite?
My favorite? I love Spider-Man 2. I might have to go with the original Evil Dead.
Okay.
Just as sort of the purest distillation.
Absolutely.
Like, everything that's great about a Sam Raimi movie is in Evil Dead. And Evil Dead 2 is great, but the I feel like a loser, because now we did James Cameron, I picked the original Terminator. We do Sam Raimi, I picked the Evil Dead. I'm like, no, everything that these guys are going to do, they did right the first time.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I kind of have to go with that.
Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson's best movie. Can I count Lord of the Rings as one movie?
No.
Okay. Then
it is 3.
I will probably have to take
different movies.
Those off the table altogether, because I don't think I could choose. I can't say, like, Return of the King is his
Sophie's
best movie.
Choice. I got you.
His worst.
No,
easy.
His best movie is Sophie's Choice. He directed that, right?
He did. Yeah. Gosh, his best. Heavenly Creatures is great. Dead Alive is so fucking great.
Dead Alive might have to be mine, only because, and I realize it's not. It speaks to a time and a place and an eye-opening situation for me.
Right.
We watched that with my mom.
Yeah.
In my parents'
Because that was a litmus test
room.
For years. Like, we would sort of meet a new person and make them watch Dead Alive, and we had just met your mom. But no, because she happened to be, like, collateral damage while we showed it to some other people, but she was totally game. And
my mom
loves
the
whole
bad B-movie, for sure.
And that was when I found all that out.
Right.
She was talking about that, but we had some other friends who were like, oh, you were going to make you watch this, and I remember, like, I was dating a new girl pre-Erica, and it was like, you and that girl and your girlfriend at the time, I think we all, like, sat together in my room and watched Dead Alive again, because it was, like, this test.
Yeah.
Almost everyone passed. Almost.
I failed.
So that would be your pick? God, what
I mean, right? Because, I mean, obviously Lord of the Rings, I've said before, I'm not the biggest Lord of the Rings fan, but I acknowledge they're excellent. I'm just not, it doesn't intrigue me as much as it intrigues everyone else. But Dead Alive just is of that specific thing that I love so much, you know?
Gosh.
King Kong.
And I do
the
love
Frighteners.
I like pieces of the Frighteners. There's things about
the Frighteners. Is kind of a Who Framed Roger Rabbit for me. It's there's parts of it that it's like, long. It's this should be great, and it's so
flawed.
So flawed.
Gosh, and I love Heavenly Creatures too, but I'll have to go with, because I can't choose one of the Lord of the Rings. If I could lump them all together, I'd say, okay, that's
you cannot. You're breaking the rules
of
the game.
I'm not arguing that I should be able to. I'm just saying, because I can't pick one of them over the other two, I'm going to take them off
you
the table.
You can't do it, Patrick, okay?
And I'll say Dead Alive. I'll agree with you, Dead Alive.
Okay.
For his worst, what are you going to say is his worst?
What are you going to say is his worst?
I'm not a huge Bad Taste fan, but hands down, it's Lovely Bones. The Lovely Bones is an unbelievable disaster of a movie.
I haven't seen The Lovely Bones.
I almost say you should, but don't.
I know exactly what you mean. Just so I can be part of the conversation. But
it's a mess in a way that's fascinating, not in a way that like Shark Knight is fascinating.
Okay.
Because he's a very talented director, and you're just like, what is this thing that he's doing? Why did he do this? Why did he do this?
Isn't what's her name?
Saoirse Ronan.
So I don't really have a worse. I don't know.
Frighteners?
Frighteners is probably because I haven't seen Lovely Bones.
Yeah.
But Frighteners is not a bad... Yeah, exactly. That's right. The whole point of the game.
Yep.
Stakes are very high.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, you can always find us at fthismovie.blogspot.com and email us your angry emails about how come you guys didn't love Roger Rabbit more? And what's that scene Doug's referencing in The Gift? fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Doug, you want to take us out?
Please, Katie Holmes, take off your top.